Dr. Roland Hanna on piano and Ron Carter on bass getting things started on Blues in the Closet, Joe Locke on vibes and Lenny White on drums. They join in later. This is from Ron Carter's 2001 album, Stardust. I got to tell you, I am so livid right now. I'm scrambling as I speak, or re-scrambling the program that I had carefully put together for today. But I'm making changes as I speak, because your president, the president of the United States, is thumping his chest right now that he was right there on the spot when Israeli troops killed, the number so far that I've gotten is 57 Palestinians protesting this ceremony today, establishing the United States Embassy in Jerusalem, which was an act, clear act of provocation when it occurred, and also the ceremony coinciding with the 70th anniversary of the establishment of the State of Israel, which coincides with the commemoration of Palestinians of the loss of their land and being driven out of their land. So it was a very tense moment today. Today is a very tense moment. But we knew back when the United States thug at the United Nations, Nikki Haley, U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, announced that the U.S. would be moving its embassy to Jerusalem, in effect, grabbing more land and making the case that, hey, if you don't like it, just lump it. So we have the beginning of a war, and this is a war that Trump has been longing for, yearning for. This is the way he wants to indicate to his Jewish supporters that he's their man. You could count on Donald Trump to do stupid things like this, brazen things like this, if only it underscores his faith, pardon this pun, in Israel. An absolute contempt for human rights in the region. So for all intents and purposes, we have a war. Israeli troops killing 57 so far, that, you know, this is the latest report I'm getting. I'm getting it the same way most people are getting it. They were unarmed, and they were also exercising their rights to remind the world that their land was taken away. And this move by the United States is clearly an act of provocation. Trump is quoted as saying today, essentially, we could do what we want. This land does not belong to the Palestinians. We could do whatever we want to do. And we choose to be in solidarity with the Israeli government with Benjamin Netanyahu, who has been working on this project for a long time, A, to test the faith and fidelity of the United States. Imagine that. Two crooks testing each other's fidelity. And just totally setting aside all international calls to maintain order and to not do something this stupid and racist in the name of supporting Israel. So we now have to ask questions as citizens of the United States. We have started a war. And the president must be held accountable. 57 people so far are dead and more than 1,600 wounded. That does not sound like a celebration or a ceremony of any kind. It sounds like exactly what it is. It's an act of war. And I tell you, if we do nothing about this president and his administration, if we do nothing, we will have only ourselves to blame for the catastrophe that is coming. Because don't believe that the Palestinians are unsupported. And don't believe that they're giving up the right to their land. And don't believe that they are going to obey into so-called international laws that have put them on the wrong side of history every single time. Theirs is a story of mass attacks. Theirs is a story of displacement, continual displacement. Theirs is a story of the so-called holy nation having no problems conducting what appears to be a genocidal plan. Get rid of these people, take the land, declare it as the land ordained by God, and who are we to argue with God? God gave them this land. And therefore, they are entitled to fight whoever stands in the way of that being done. It is against the will of God. Therefore, there is no need to consider you as a human being. You are fighting the will of God. This is the madness that is going on. This is the kind of obscenity that is going on, that is being blessed by other nations of the world who see no reason to step in, as they are required to do under international law, and say, no, this is not what is going to happen here. We are not going to condone the slaughter of innocent people. We are not going to condone the systematic dispossession of these people. And they're having a ceremony while Israeli troops are shooting down, killing and wounding about, they said, an estimate now of 1,200 or 1,600 people, wounded, but more than 57 dead. Does that sound like a great backdrop for a celebration? And what is the celebration? To conspire with this renegade state to further dispossess the people of their land, drive them out, and finish them off. What is going to be the reaction in the United States? We passed the point of gentle protests. What has to be going on in Washington at this time when Trump and his daughter and his son-in-law, who still can't fill out a form, more than 40 times he has forgotten things to enter into his accounting form. Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, is there grinning like a Cheshire cat. He's so happy to be in the environment where people are being slaughtered. He must know why. And these are the elements within the Jewish community that have Donald Trump in their clutches. He's doing everything they command him to do, because he thinks that would put him in good stead. That would make him a resolute president. That will make him a president who is not afraid of the Arabs. What a horrible, horrible, horrible statement it is. It almost brings me to tears that this is happening in our time. And we seem to have no way to control this beast in Washington called the Trump administration. We have no way to rein them in. They're all acting like thugs, all of them. They don't have to obey any laws. They don't have to observe international laws. They don't have to observe anything. Benjamin Netanyahu acts like he is running this country. Congress is the second Knesset. More than $90 billion a year going to the so-called state, assisting it with these horrific machinations to destroy a people utterly and completely. Is this what we want our tax dollars to do and to support? When a president, and they know what they're doing, they've planned this. They planned it. They're having a ceremony. Music is playing. Ivanka Trump is unveiling the plaque for the United States' new embassy in Jerusalem. Everybody's having a great time because the objective is being accomplished. And even in the backdrop of gunshots and lives lost, they continue. There's no problem here. Certainly there's no problem that we can't manage. You know, Israeli soldiers are known as some of the best troops, best trained troops in the world. They shoot to kill. And the United States taxpayer dollars is helping to finance these mass killings by the Israeli government and the systematic emptying of people's historic lands under the guise that God gave these lands to us. I tell you today, with this vicious act, this is not a matter of confrontation, this is war. This is what war looks like at the start. The US government has absolutely no intention of observing or obeying international law. Trump just said, hey, I'm moving the embassy. That's it. I could do it all by myself. And there we are. A brand new embassy built under seriously contested circumstances in contested territory. What else could it be but an act of provocation? And the feeling is there's nothing that the people will do. They will behave like Americans, just lay down and find ways to excuse it and forgive it and forget it. But today is a very sad day. A very, very sad day. Anybody with a conscience should be very, very concerned about what happened today, which was planned and deliberate and something of dual purpose of two kleptocrats, Donald Trump, Benjamin Netanyahu. Both of whom have absolute disgust and derision for international law and order. And the fact that you could sit at this unveiling of a plaque of the new US Embassy being built, nobody asked anybody, should we? We already have an embassy. Why do we need to move and build a new one? It's because this is part of the long-range plan to totally vacate the area, to empty it of anybody remotely Palestinian. It's contemptible and condemnable. And Americans need to be out in the street with this cold-blooded mass murder, which is one thing. What is awful, even more disgusting, is that there is Ivanka Trump in her new line, a dress of her new line. Looking very pretty. And her idiotic husband, who has been given the task of carrying through US policy in the Middle East as if he has even remotely the idea of how you get that done, or the qualifications for how you get that done. This raises another question about the influence on Washington by sectors of the Jewish community in Israel and in the United States following a rather undemocratic agenda. and with the aid and support of billions of dollars in U.S. support. We have some questions to raise and answer now. But just think about it. People, supposedly, we talk all the time about the right to protest. They didn't have guns. They didn't have weapons. They had only themselves, and they were marching. This was not a war. They didn't envision this to be a war, but a very brisk and a very loud and raucous protest to bring to the attention of the world what is happening there. But today, mark my word, Donald Trump has started a war, and the United States will pay for it in one way or another. He's been dying for a war. His minions in his administration have been doing everything to provoke a war, any kind of war, anywhere. Well, they got it today. Don't for a moment believe that this calamity, this catastrophe, is going to go unanswered. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We have a leader who, I have said time and again, is off kilter mentally. He has been, in my view, it seems that he has been surrendering to undue influences. He keeps talking about putting America first, making America great again. No, making Israel great again first. And that's how you make America great again. You make Israel great again first. And not the Israel that most Israelis want either. You make that hawkish, just completely undemocratic sector of Israel. You make that one first. Great again. I should caution here that we should not believe that the actions today by the Israeli army or the Israeli government reflects all Jews. Quite the opposite. No Jew in Israel with some degree of understanding of its recent history. By that I mean the recent history of the past 70 years or so, thinks this is a good way to solve a problem. But they have a renegade prime minister, and they have factions, political factions in Israel, fed by and supplied with what they need to conduct a Holocaust in our time. And they're proceeding according to plan. The role of the United States here should have been one of moderation, not one of complicity. the role of the United States was to involve the world community of nations, and if anything, play a star role in getting countries involved in looking at the situation in Israel and working hard to solve it. That's not, though, what this government wants. This government is about money and power, and power and money. It will do anything. Donald Trump needs badly, he believes. He needs something to distinguish himself and his hard line, keeping these dark-skinned people in their place. And he will combine forces with anybody thinking similarly. He will support that, which means your tax dollars and my tax dollars are supporting what happened today. Are we still going to lay back thinking that we will wait and see how things turn out? That maybe there's something else that we're missing here? Or are we really going to exercise our democratic rights, objecting to the conduct of our nation? That's the question that we'll have to take on, and we can't be silent anymore. We can't be silent, not with this president. We cannot be silent anymore. It's an abomination what has happened today and continues to happen today. And while these people are being shot dead, our so-called diplomatic corps is sitting outside, having all dressed, looking nice, and totally oblivious, intentionally oblivious to the slaughter that is occurring. And they are unveiling the plaque of the new United States Embassy in Jerusalem. Look, I'm sorry I vented, but, you know, I really am not. I'm very, very angry, as I think most Americans should be today. We have to do something about this renegade government, because as of today, it has plunged us officially into a war. It got the war it wanted. It needed a war real fast. This was the first one. Others are coming, because this really is the intention of this administration, to go to war with the world. No matter what the people say, they have plans. We'll take this break, come back right after that, and proceed with the next half of the program. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I just finished getting some feelings out. I hope I didn't overstep my bounds. But We have to speak up. We have to do something, and we have to do something to rein in what is so clear as the agenda that will involve us one way or the other. On May the 7th, I did a commentary titled, "The Always Lying President Just Keeps on Lying." I noted, quote, "He lies about big things and small. He lies to make himself look good and others bad. He even lies about lying. There is no hope, it seems, that the lying will stop. But President Trump's lies are quite consequential. His lying ways have caught on in his administration." Well, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, of all people, ran with the theme, it seems, in a commencement speech he delivered at Rice University this past Saturday, May 12th. Without calling any names, he talked about the, quote, "epidemic of dishonesty," unquote, that has entrenched itself in American politics and society. And he warned that left unchecked and unchallenged, it will utterly destroy democracy. Now, this was my program. This was the second half of my program that I intended. And it was prescient in this way. But it signaled that this has come to the attention and it's worrying people who understand the consequences of an administration like this. I want to share with you Michael Bloomberg's speech and appreciate the fact that he is speaking from a position of knowledge about how things run in this country. Here's Michael Bloomberg.
When I was deciding what I really wanted to say today, I kept thinking about a Rice tradition that's an incredibly important part of student life here. No, I'm not talking about Willie Week. I'm talking about the Honor Code. When you first arrived on campus for O Week, you attended a presentation on the Honor Code. On your very first quiz, testing your knowledge of that code, you had to say what it was about. And so today I thought it would be fitting for you as graduates to end your time here the same way you began it, by hearing a few words about the meaning of honor. Don't worry, there's no quiz involved, but there will be a test when you leave this campus, one that will last for the rest of your life. And that's what I want to explain today, and it actually starts with the opposite of honor. As a New Yorker, I was surprised to learn that an act of dishonor in my hometown almost blocked Rice from coming into existence. William Marshall Rice was murdered at his home in Manhattan, just a few blocks from my company's headquarters, by two schemers who tried to rewrite his will. They were caught, his money went where he wanted it to go, the university was built, and fittingly, an honor code was created that has been central to student life here from the beginning. And ever since you arrived here on campus, on nearly every test and paper you submitted, you signed a statement that began, "On my honor." But have you ever stopped to think what the phrase really means? The concept of honor has taken on different meanings throughout the ages. Chivalry, chastity, courage, strength. And when divorced from morality or attached to prejudice, honor has been used to justify murder and repression and deceit. But the essence of honor has always been found in the word itself. And those of you who majored in linguistics probably know the words honor and honest are two sides of the same coin. In fact, the Latin word honestus can mean both honest and honorable. To be honorable, you must be honest. And that means speaking honestly and acting honestly, even when it requires you to admit wrongdoing and suffer the consequences. The commitment to honesty is a responsibility that you accepted as an owl. It is also, I believe, a patriotic responsibility. As young children, one of the first things we learned about American history is the story of George Washington and the fallen cherry tree. "I cannot tell a lie," young George tells his father. "I cut it down." That story is a legend, of course, but legends are passed down from generation to generation because they carry some larger truth. The cherry tree legend has endured because it's not really about George Washington. It is about us as a nation. It is about what we want for our children and what we value in our leaders: honesty. We have always lionized our two greatest presidents, Washington and Lincoln, not only for their accomplishments, but also for their honesty. We see their integrity and morals as a reflection of our honor as a nation. However, today, when we look at the city that bears Washington's name, it's hard not to wonder, what the hell happened? In 2016, the Oxford English Dictionary's word of the year was post-truth. Last year brought us the phrase alternative facts. In essence, they both mean up can be down, black can be white, truth can be false, feelings can be facts. A New York senator known for working across the aisle, my old friend Patrick Moynihan, once said, "People are entitled to their own opinions, but not their own facts." That didn't used to be a controversial statement. Today, those in politics routinely dismiss any inconvenient information, no matter how factual, as fake, and they routinely say things that are demonstrably false. When authoritarian regimes around the world did this, we scoffed at them. We thought the American people would never stand for that. For my generation, the plain truth about America, the freedom, opportunity, and prosperity that we enjoyed, was our most powerful advantage in the Cold War. The more the communists had access to real news, the more they would demand freedom. We believed that, and we were right. Today, though, many of those at the highest level of power see the plain truth as a threat. They fear it, they deny it, and they attack it, just as the communists once did. And so here we are in the midst of an epidemic of dishonesty and an endless barrage of lies. The trend towards elected officials propagating alternative realities, or winking at those that do, is one of the most serious dangers facing democracies. Free societies depend on citizens who recognize that deceit in government isn't something to just shrug your shoulders at. When elected officials speak as though they are above the truth, they will act as though they are above the law. And when we tolerate dishonesty, we get criminality. Sometimes it's in the form of corruption. Sometimes it's abuse of power. Sometimes it's both. If left unchecked, these abuses can erode the institutions that protect and preserve our rights and freedoms and open the door to tyranny and fascism. Now, you might say, there's always been deceitful politicians and dishonest politicians in both parties. And that's true. But there is now more tolerance for dishonesty in politics than I've seen in my lifetime. And I've been alive for one-third of the time the United States has existed. I know you find that hard to believe, so do I, but if you do the math, that's what it is. My generation can tell you, the only thing more dangerous than dishonest politicians who have no respect for the law is a chorus of enablers who defend their every lie. Remember the honor code here at Rice. Remember, the honor code here at Rice just doesn't require you to be honest. It requires you to say something if you saw others acting dishonestly. Now, that might be the most difficult part of the honor code, but it also may be the most important because violations affect the whole community. And the same is true in our country. If we want elected officials to be honest, we have to hold them accountable when they are not, or else suffer the consequences. Now, don't get me wrong. Honest people can disagree. That's what democracy is all about. But productive debate requires an exception of basic reality. Take science, for example. If 99% of scientists whose research has been peer-reviewed reach the same general conclusion about a theory, then we ought to accept it as the best available information, even if it's not 100% certain. Take climate change, for example. Climate change is only a theory, just like gravity is only a theory. And the fact that Newton's theory of motion didn't take into account Maxwell's observations and the speed of electromagnetic waves as a constant, and that Einstein's special theory of relativity describes motion better than Newton did when things move very fast, that doesn't mean that if I let this pen go, it won't fall. That's not, graduates, a Chinese hoax. It's called science, and we should demand that politicians have the honesty to respect it. Hard though it is to believe, some federal agencies have actually banned their employees from using the phrase climate change. If censorship solved problems, today we'd all be part of the old USSR and the Soviets would have us speaking Russian. Of course, it's always good to be skeptical and ask questions, but we must be willing to place a certain amount of trust in the integrity of scientists. If you aren't willing to do that, don't get on an airplane, don't use a cell phone or microwave, don't get treated in a hospital, and don't even think about binge-watching Netflix. Scientific discovery permeates practically every aspect of our lives, except too often our political debates. The dishonesty in Washington isn't just about science, of course. We weren't tackling so many of the biggest problems that affect your future. We aren't. From the lack of good jobs in many communities, to the prevalence of gun violence, to the threats to the economy and threats to the environment. Because too many political leaders are being dishonest about facts and data, and too many people are letting them get in the way. So how did we get here? How did we go from a president who could not tell a lie to politicians who cannot tell the truth? From a George Washington who embodied honesty to a Washington, D.C. defined by deceit? It's popular to blame social media for spreading false information. I, for one, am totally convinced that Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber are still dating. But the problem isn't just unreliable stories. It's also the public's willingness, even eagerness, to believe that anything that paints the other side in a bad light. That's extreme partisanship, and that's what's fueling and excusing all this dishonesty. Extreme partisanship is like an infectious disease, but instead of crippling the body, it cripples the mind. It blocks us from understanding the other side. It blinds us from seeing the strengths in their ideas and the weaknesses of our own. And it leads us to defend or excuse lies and unethical actions when our own side commits them. For example, in the 1990s, leading Democrats spent the decade defending the occupant of the Oval Office against charges of lying and personal immorality and attempting to silence and discredit the women who spoke out. At the same time, leading Republicans spent that whole decade attacking the lack of ethics and honesty in the White House. Today, those roles are exactly reversed, not because the parties have changed their beliefs, but because the party occupying the Oval Office has changed. When someone's judgment about an action depends on the party affiliation of the person who committed it, they're being dishonest with themselves and with the public. And yet those kinds of judgments have become so second nature that many people in both parties don't even realize that they are making them. Now, I know it's natural to root for your own side, especially when the other side is the Houston Cougars, but governing is not a game. When people see the world as a battle between left and right, they become more loyal to their tribe than to our country. When power, not progress, becomes the object of the battle, truth and honesty become the first casualties. You learned here at Rice that honesty leads to trust, and trust leads to freedom, like the freedom to take tests outside the classroom. In democracy, it's no different. If we aren't honest with one another, if we don't trust one another, then we place limits on what we ourselves can do and what we can do together as a country. It's a formula for gridlock and national decline. But graduates, here's the thing. It does not have to be that way. When I was in city government, I didn't care which party proposed an idea. I never once asked anyone his or her party affiliation during a job interview or who they voted for. As a result, we had a dream team of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. That diversity made our debates sharper, our policies smarter, and our government better. Arguments were won and lost on facts and data, not on parties and polls. That was why we had success. And it's been great to see other mayors around the country taking the same kind of approach. But at the national level, Washington today, partisanship is everything. And I think the dishonesty that it produces is one of the greatest challenges that your generation will have to confront. Of course, partisanship is not a new problem. George Washington actually warned against it in his farewell address. He referred to the dangers of parties and called the passion that people have for parties, quote, the worst enemy of democracy, a precursor to tyranny. Washington urged Americans to, quote, discourage and restrain partisanship. Sadly, in recent years, the opposite has happened. There is now unrestrained, rabid partisanship everywhere as we look. It's not just on social media and cable news. It's in the communities where we live, which are becoming more red and more blue. It's in the groups and association and churches we join, which increasingly attract like-minded people. It is even in the people we marry. 50 years ago, most parents didn't care whether their children married a member of another political party, but they didn't want them marrying outside their race or religion or inside their gender. Today, thankfully, polls show a strong majority support for interracial, interreligious, and same-sex marriage, and that is progress. But unfortunately, the percentage of parents who don't want their children marrying outside their political party has doubled. And the more people segregate themselves by party, the harder it becomes to understand the other side, and the more extreme each party grows. Studies show that people become more extreme in their views when they are grouped together with like-minded people. And that's now happening in both parties. As a result, I think it's fair to say this country is more divided by party than it has ever been since the Civil War. Last month, legislators in South Carolina, which was the first state in the Union to secede back in 1860, introduced a resolution that contemplated a debate on secession. Now, it's easy to dismiss that as a fringe idea, and let's hope it never happens. But in like-minded groups, fringe ideas can gather momentum with dangerous speed. Just remember Germany in the late 1930s. If that continues to happen here, America will become even more divided. And our national anthem may as well become the Taylor Swift song, "We Are Never, Ever, Ever Getting Back Together." So why do I bring this up as you finish your time at this great university? Well, I'm hoping you graduates will draw more inspiration from a song by a different artist, Zedd, Maren Morris, and Gray. Why don't they just meet in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. Now, bringing the country back together I know won't be easy, but I believe it can be done, and if we are continue as a true democracy, it must be done, and it will be up to your generation to lead it. Graduates, you are ready for this challenge, because bringing this country back together starts with the first lesson that you learned here at Rice. Honesty matters. And everyone must be held accountable for being honest. So as you go out into the world, I urge you to do what honesty requires. Recognize that no one person nor either party has a monopoly on good ideas. Judge events based on what happened, not who did it. Hold yourself and our leaders to the highest standards of ethics and morality. Respect the knowledge of scientists. Follow the data wherever it leads. Listen to people you disagree with without trying to censor them or shout over them. And have the courage to say things that your own side doesn't want to hear. I just came yesterday from visiting an old friend in Arizona who has displayed that kind of courage throughout his life, Senator John McCain, who is currently fighting brain cancer. Now, John and I often don't see eye to eye on issues. But I've always admired his willingness to reach across the aisle when others wouldn't dare. He bucked party leaders when his conscience demanded it. He defended the honor of his opponents, even when it cost him votes. And he owed up to his mistakes, just like that young kid with a cherry tree. Imagine what our country would be like if more of our elected officials had the courage to serve with the honor that John has always shown on the battlefield, in Washington, and in his personal life. Graduates, today you will no longer be bound by the Rice Honor Code. It will be up to you to decide how to live your life and to follow your own honor code. This university has given you a special opportunity to learn the true meaning of honor to base that new code on. And now, I believe you have a special obligation to carry it forward into your workplaces, your communities, your political discussions, and yes, into the voting booth. Because the greatest threat to American democracy isn't communism or jihadism or any other external force or foreign power. It is our own willingness to tolerate dishonesty in service of party and in pursuit of power. So let me leave you with one final thought. We can all recite the inspiring words that begin the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. But remember, the Founding Fathers were able to bring those truths to life only because of the Declaration's final words. We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. That pledge of honor and that commitment to truth is why we are here today. And in order to preserve those truths and the rights they guarantee us, every generation must take that same pledge. And now it's your turn. Earlier today, I told President LeBron that I'd like to make a donation to Rice. His eyes lit up, but I said, no, not a financial donation. I told him I'd like to donate a cherry tree to be planted here on campus with a plaque that reads, in honor of the class of 2018. And when you come back as alumni, if you pass by the tree, I hope you remember why it's there and what it represents to our great country. And throughout your life, when you chop down a cherry tree, as we all do from time to time, admit it and demand nothing less from those who represent us. Graduates, you have earned this great celebration. So tonight, have one last honey butter chicken biscuit. And tomorrow, carry the values of this great university with you wherever you go. You will never regret it. I make that pledge to you on my honor. Congratulations and go Owls!
Former mayor of the city of New York, Michael Bloomberg, sharing some words with the graduates at Rice University and making it clear without even calling a name who his primary target was. And what it was, this system that has volunteered itself to behave so dishonorably. And all we can do is to oppose it and make it clear that it does not function in our name. We give it no license to function in our name. Not when it's engaging in this kind of brutality and warmongering. I thank you so much for listening today. I thank you for allowing me some room to vent. And I hope that we can look at this development today with an eye toward increasing our involvement in setting things right in our society. We can no longer pretend that, well, you know, this is just a quirk of the president's personality. No. These are the actions of a sick administration, which finds good company with other sick administrations. We have to step up and say something and do something. Why? Because obviously we could be targets. Similarly, we could be targets at any time. And we have been. Unilateral decisions being made that put us at great risk. votes taken that do not reflect our thinking. And this whole idea of democracy, where we have no participation whatsoever in what appears to be a renegade government. So it is up to us to now put some effort into asserting our rights, not just for ourselves, but in behalf of others. We still must not forget that on this day, people just trying to commemorate a significant timeline in their lives as a nation were just mowed down. While not far away, the president's entourage were having a delightful time cementing the symbol of world imperialism, where it's not just an embassy, it's a statement of utter and complete control. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned. Stay right here on PRN.FM. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye. Thank you.